Hey friends, you're listening to Go Home Bob or You're Drunk, an irreverent media podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Everybody, welcome to Go Home Bible You're Drunk, the only podcast you can ejaculate to responsibly. I'm Tori. I don't really do those kinds of things, but I support you if you do. Former evangelical, and now I have a podcast making fun of evangelicals and their very strange, weird beliefs and obsession with magic and purity and women not having any access to their own bodies. I also have a co-host.
Yes, my name is Justin. I'm mostly certain I have ejaculated responsibly 100% of the time. So I had to think about it for a second. I wanted to be honest, you know?
That's fair. That's legit. Like, yeah.
I did an inventory of every single one of them and discovered, yes, I have been responsible. So I was also a pastor and a professional evangelical. And yeah, now I do this podcast where we just examine all the weird things about what we used to believe and laugh to keep from crying. So today we have a great episode today. We are joined by another co-host from a fantastic podcast called Thereafter. We have Megan Crozier with us. And Megan, if you want to just tell the folks a little bit about yourself and then we'll get on with the show.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me. I don't know if I have a lot to say about ejaculation just yet. I might get there, but build up to it. I am Megan. I'm the pursuing. Yeah. I have some build up. Yeah. Gonna edge it out a little bit. I am pursuing life on Twitter and yes, have Thereafter with my co-host Cortland Coffee, and I'm happy to be here.
All right. So well, we just kind of came out with it today, but we
responsibly.
So this week in evangelicalism, we're gonna talk about the, I don't know, conservative meltdown on Twitter over phrases like responsible ejaculation, female pleasure, autonomy. Like, honestly, it just kind of became a whole cluster. I actually don't know how it started, but it's all over my feed now. Just mostly men having a meltdown over the fact that they just can't, that they have to control themselves, actually. So I don't feel like maybe I should start this conversation. I'll intro it and then I'll punt it to either Tori or Megan to discuss a bit, and then, you know, I'll jump in occasionally. I believe in responsible ejaculation. That's really my take, honestly. Like, men should be a part of this,
man.
For sure.
This should be a bumper sticker that people put on their cars.
It should be.
It's like, let's just identify ourselves right now. Yeah, there is kind of an interesting freak out, and it's fascinating because I think, at least from what I can tell, right? Because we grew up in a space where abortion was seen as a thing that people did for fun, right? Like, mm-hmm. People like to go to the vagina dentist for kicks. It's just a cool thing to do. And so there's this idea that women aren't capable of being responsible for like the contents of their uterus. Like, you're not mature enough for that. But men can't be held responsible is sort of this reaction is telling me. So it's like, so no one is responsible. Like, the state is responsible now. Like, what are we even talking about? Because yeah, when I think that there has been like this very, I don't know, it's the soft tyranny of low expectations for all of the dudes, for all of human history, I guess. But yeah, it is very strange to see this like allergic reaction that they're having to the idea of like being responsible for what comes out of their bodies. Like,
yeah. Weird. It's very strange.
Well, and I think I think it started with a tweet by Meg Wise, who's Nomadic Soul on mm-hmm. Twitter, basically just saying that, yeah, like we always put the responsibility on women to have the protection in place and have all of the things. But what if we just asked men to ejaculate responsibly? And there is a book called, I know Dr. Tina recommended it to me a while back, called Ejaculate Responsibly. And it's just kind of a mind fuck when men have to think about like, wait, we have to. Actually, our bodies could be controlled or our bodies could be asked for things. And I think that's where it's like, wait a mm-hmm. second.
And again, it is the bare minimum ask. Like, it's not a complicated like request. It's not like I hesitate to even call it taking responsibility, because at least in my mind, it's like the barest minimum thing you would do when yeah. you're going to be intimate with somebody. But I'm finding out more and more that I'm apparently different, because it just, and it's frustrating too, because like I saw a bunch of guys in the comments threads that were basically more or less saying that like when a woman consents to sex, she's also consenting to the potential for pregnancy. Like,
nope.
That's just like, I agree. I'm not saying, I'm repeating what was said. That. I'm not.
No, I understand. I'm yeah. saying no.
Like that's the whole
package. You don't get any
deal.
Sex then. Like, yeah. No.
See,
under those yes. circumstances, no sex. Fine. You don't get to have sex. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. Like, I can handle my own shit. Thank you very much. Better than you, to be honest. So, mm-hmm. No, like sex equals like, you now have 20 plus years of responsibility for another human being. Like, so for me to have sex one time, that's what I'm saying. Like, no, nobody would sign up for that shit. Like, you are
yeah.
detached from reality if that is your position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was where I just saw so many takes that just like, I had to like do a double take of like this is being said by a person. Like, I just don't get it.
I don't understand. Like, yeah, it's strange. Like the disparity, because it's one of those situations where a lot of men want it both ways, right? Mm-hmm. Like they want to be able to have fun and they want to be able to also like not be responsible for anything. And it just becomes more and more bizarre, like the more entitled they get about it in terms of like the arguments that they're coming up with, like why it's important for me to not have to be responsible with like where I put my dick. Like, that's not my problem. It's like, well, yeah, it is. Cause like you get to get off or not. So it is your problem actually. And I don't, you know, I'm not really sure. Like, it was hard to say if the people that were responding to this specific or the men that were responding to the specific tweet overwhelmingly were like people that were married or not. It seemed like it was maybe kind of a mix.
Yeah, it wasn't just like single incel dudes.
Right. Like, yeah, it seemed like it was kind of a spectrum of people who were opposed to
this. But it seemed like it led, I don't know if this was a separate conversation, but it seemed like it led right away into another whole conversation about still needing consent, even within marriage, which I feel like is probably something, a conversation that's on your, don't you have like a calendar, a go home Bible, your drunk mm-hmm. calendar of all
evangelical
of the
outrage
that,
calendar. Yeah.
That needs to be added to
yes.
it.
And I feel like, exactly. Because then it exploded this whole topic of like, well, in a Christian marriage, women are obligated to satisfy their husbands,
nope.
you know, and this and that. And somebody, and they were like, well, he's, you know, he's hardworking all day. What do you expect him to come home to? Like, he should be able to relax and have some pleasure. And the person that they were tweeting at was like, actually, I'm the breadwinner. And they're like, figures, you had to settle to be in the breadwinner in your marriage because you couldn't satisfy. It was just this whole, I was like, there are so many layers of problematic things here that I can't even unpack all of them as I'm watching this unfold, because there's like the consent piece and then the misogynistic piece and the page. Like, it was just so much. I was like, I like back away slowly into the bushes.
Yeah,
that's amazing. It does make me think like more broadly about how within purity culture, everything tracks back to like girls, anyone socialized female, is responsible for anything sexual that happens ever, whether or not they consented, whether or not they had any interest in it. Like, it's all your responsibility, right? And not even like actions, like other people's thoughts are your responsibility. So it, to me, I think that like there's a way in which like culture is really kind of deeply misogynistic, right? But then within evangelicalism, they like make it into theology, mm-hmm. right? So they make their misogyny into like, well, this is what God wants, which, you know, the Bible is pretty misogynistic, but again, it's like you don't have to use your little like Bronze Age like collection of letters and random like people getting high and writing shit down in order to believe the Bible, quote unquote, whatever that means. It's like you don't have to get all of your morality from the Bible. And I've said this for years on Twitter, but like you should not be getting your sexual ethics from the Bible, because like on sexual ethics, the Bible is atrocious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's...
But if you don't get your ethics from the Bible, how are you not murdering people? That's the argument that I've gotten.
That's my
and I'm
favorite.
Like, have you read the same Bible that I've read? Because there's a lot of murder.
It's really, yeah, I don't know. I that's honestly like my favorite argument right now. It's like, how come you're not committing murders? Like, well, yeah, there is a lot of murder in the Bible. So are you volunteering? Because like, I can go get a sword. Like, what are you saying right now? I don't understand what you're getting at.
Or five small stones.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There we go.
A sling, you know, like, yeah. And it's strange too, like when any time in this conversation, like, well, because if we want to kind of take it down another rabbit trail when it comes to like abortion, the same men that will be like, we have no responsibility to of where we ejaculate, it's entirely on the woman, like, you know, she consented to sex, therefore she consents to pregnancy, it's not my problem, they're the exact same guys that would turn around like once their partner, one night stand, whatever, is pregnant to be like, I have a right to tell you whether or not you carry this child to term. Like, so right. it's a very like misogyny very much like flits in and out of responsibility, like, mm-hmm. and that's where to me, honestly, I think to me, I mean, I don't know if it was ADHD or a touch of the tism or just trying to be consistent, like, honestly, I think that's why a lot of evangelicalism and misogyny didn't stick for me. Because I do require a certain amount of consistency in my life. And so it's like when I see stuff like this, I'm like, wait a second, like either we're responsible or we're not. Like,
I think that within evangelicalism specifically and in culture more broadly, though, there is men don't want responsibility. They want authority.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's what that lets them have it both ways, essentially. Right. If I'm the authority figure in this relationship, even if like anything from like a one night stand situation to a marriage, then like, yeah, I get to come and go as I please, you know, literally and figuratively. And like, I get to also choose when I'm in charge and when I have no responsibility. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, I'm the ultimate authority in the relationship, which again, it's like, it's very odd. Because I know, Justin, you mentioned that it wasn't necessarily like a bunch of incels who are making this comment, but it is very strange to me that there is kind of this conversation that's been happening for several years at this point around the idea of like, it's not that hard to not be a dick. Like, if you want to get laid, just like be a nice person, like be interested in other people and like have a personality. And they're like, nope, that's too far. I can't do that. I'm oppressed.
Yeah, well, like...
Okay.
Well, and also, is that, I mean, are they really seeking out sex that's obligatory? Like, are they like, actually, because, you know, you're raised in purity culture and you're told like, hey, once you get married, bam, you have God and your spouse that all in the bedroom together and it's going to be phenomenal. And then you have these like Christian men that are coming out of the woodwork to be like, we should have obligatory sex in Christian marriage. And you're like, is that fun for you? Is that something that's that's desirable for you, because another way is to actually be a really loving and caring partner and have good sex and not have your partner be obliged to have sex. Like, it just, it got into that whole thing. Yeah, like, and I was like,
And maybe incel man, married person, like, the amount of times you have sex could be less, but the quality of that sex will be orders of magnitude better. Like, you know, like, I don't want to get too graphic here, but I'll tone it. Nothing turns me off more than someone who doesn't want to have sex with me. Like, it's, you know, like, it's like, if that's not like, if you're not into it, like, I turn off is strong. Like, if you're not into it, I'm not into it. Like, that's not even a turn off. It's just like, now is not the time. Like, right. It's just like, I can't imagine the person that's like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's
8 p.m.
Like,
it's
like
fucking rapists. Like, that, those are the dudes that are rapists.
100%. Like, I just can't, I can't even, that doesn't, like, my, like, no. Computer. Like, I would rather watch TV. I would rather eat a candy bar or go for a walk. Anything,
do
really.
Literally anything other than commit fucking rape, which, yes. Again, it's like what's keeping you from committing rape and murder? It's like, I do all the rape and murder I want to.
Which is none. Like,
okay, one other thing I have to slip in here, because you talked about the lack of consistency, and I feel like this is also the same crowd that was screaming "My Body, My Choice" about masking, mm-hmm. and just, yep. I that was the thing that put me over the edge, because I was like, do you realize what's happening here? Because you want the government to control bodies, but then when it's you and masking and something that would, you know, really protect everyone, no, mm-hmm. like you're wanting to, yeah, it just, we don't have to go down that trail, but I just needed to say that, because that lack of consistency mm-hmm. was mind blowing.
Yeah. And the conversation online, it was unhinged, like, you know, to the point where it was like, if you're, there was one, I need to pull it up here. I'm like, basically, like, this guy was saying, like, if you have like, seeking an orgasm as a woman is gay, like, and then I think, yeah, it was Meg. It was like, having an orgasm is gay now. Okay. You know, he's like, not for a man, but you're not a man. Or at least you claim to be a woman. But I personally think you're actually more like a man. And that's why you're talking like a man, like, basically wanting to have pleasure during sex. That was the context. Like, keep your diseases in your community, this guy said. like, I'm like,
this just goes along with my theory that evangelical men are afraid of queer folks, because they're starting to realize that once women discover sex with other women, they're never going to turn mm-hmm. back.
Yeah, it's true. And like, there's also the whole idea of like, men can't do that without like losing their man card, but you don't like lose your woman card because you like bang a bunch of chicks. So yeah, it's all really, it's very bizarre, but it's all, yeah, it, to me, it's all about like, it's the authority versus responsibility. So it's like,
yeah, actually, I think that's a good distinction too, because like, if someone actually does like care about responsibility, it's like, I want to make myself better in order to meet the demands of life around me. Like, mm-hmm. so like, if I have a partner that's, you know, like, that is, this is going to sound, is an extra needy today. And I'm not saying that pejoratively today, just like, have needs, like
actual needs,
like, someone who's more about responsibility is more like, I will do what I can to arise to that occasion. And mm-hmm. that might mean my day is different today, but okay, then that's fine. Someone who's more authoritative is like, well, like, you need to lower yourself to where I'm at. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, the standards are too high. Like, women are too picky. You know, there was an article I read that was hilarious about how Republican men and conservative men are pretending to be Democrats in order to get dates, because women are just looking at their like Tinder profiles. Oh, you're conservative, done. Like, so they're starting to lie. Interest. So there was this article that was talking about this. And then I saw a bunch of people posting about it that were like, hey, ladies, here's some questions you can ask a guy to kind of unearth if he's lying about his, and it wasn't just like, where were you on January 6th, but it was just like, you know, just do it. But it's just, it's interesting that they're like, rather than being a better person, I'm going to figure out ways to lie and trick women into banging me. Like it's that, right. That is what, like, I don't know. They've lost the plot. Like that's all I've got to say.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for women having to put up with this shit. Like I look at it and I'm like, oh my God, I can't. I can close Twitter and these guys aren't like in my DMs. Like they're not interested in me. Well, they might be interested in me, but they're so closeted about it. They take it out on women. But like that, I can't say I'm sorry because it's not, but I that sucks.
On behalf of men.
Yeah. On behalf of men, I'm sorry, but I don't want to claim them. I don't know. Like, how about just be a better human and don't lie about it? I mean, I'm sure that's in the Bible somewhere.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Bible lets you be sneaky and manipulative to get sex.
Fair.
I don't actually know that that's the case.
So, fellas, ejaculate responsibly. Like that will be the editorial position of this podcast.
Or the will be the title.
Fair, yes.
Maybe. It's good SEO.
Ejaculating, yeah, it's good SEO. Ejaculating responsibly with Megan Crozier.
great.
So, yeah, your name is attached to that now.
I mean, we are later in the story going to talk about all the foreskins that David secures for his bride. So I feel like there's just a lot of great thematic elements.
There really
to
is.
This.
This is the hard hitting coverage that you're here for, folks. So anything else we want to cover on this particular topic?
Fuck them dudes.
or don't fuck them dudes.
Responsibly, though.
Don't fuck them. Yeah, figuratively, not literally. Don't fuck them literally, but they don't deserve it.
All right. So let's have a quick capitalism break and then we'll get back and we'll talk about David, one of David's brides. And yeah, we'll stick around.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
All right, thanks, everybody. Hope you had a great ad, either for McDonald's or Alexis or, you know, whatever pops up for you. The weird world that is targeted ads. Anyway, so if you don't want the ads, you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/gohomebible. You get access to ad-free versions of the show, as well as our Discord community, a few other things. If you are at the youth pastor tier and above, you get a life verse, which is yours forever till you don't want it anymore. So go check it out, patreon.com/gohomebible, and get all the details there. And yeah, we'd love to see them. If you can't do that, if you know money's tight or whatever, you just don't want to, if you could share the episode, that'd be great. Give us a 5-star review. We're currently only accepting 5-star reviews at this time. If you have a nasty review, you can send an email, gohomebible@gmail.com. We'll probably read it. And yeah, you may even feature on the show. So
it's a strange promise, but okay.
If it's a bad enough email, we might read
sure,
that loud.
Why not?
So go for it. 5-star review, nasty email. All right.
Those are the two options.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of nasty emails, Megan, have you gotten any nasty emails about content warning? Are people offended?
No, but you know what's funny? When the website went live, I started sending it to everyone. I was so excited. I was like, check out our website, contentwarningevent.com. And a couple people texted me on like separately and said, hey, did you send me a link? I might have gotten some spam from you. And I was like, I realized that it does look kind of like what spam would be, but this is actually legit a website for an actual event.
We're all going to be there. It's going to be great. Haven't figured out if there's a hot tub involved yet, but, you know, Lord willing, I suppose.
Yeah. See chapel probation.
I can tell you the event space
for the
itself does not have
the event itself
tub,
but does not have a hot tub. There is no official content warning hot tub.
So we've established on this show that there's not a hot tub provided at the event, nor is making porn a part of the event. In a previous show, we had to establish that too. There is a live stream of the event, but it includes
neither hot tub nor porn.
Yeah.
Or any combination of the two.
Yes.
That might be extra. I don't know. We're not making any promises one way or the other. You're just going to have to show up and see what happens.
Yes. We have established what content warning is not. Megan, could you help us understand a little better? What is content warning?
Yeah. So content warning is an event that I started. I had the idea. We did a meetup in Portland about a year and a half ago, and it was a huge hit. And we kind of wanted to have a theme this time, and we wanted to kind of make it a little bit bigger. So we are having an event that kind of revolves around having conversations about coming out of purity culture. And so my big thing for this is I want to be as inclusive as possible. And I tend to see a lot of these conversations either going in the direction of kind of sitting in the trauma that was purity culture. And we're not doing that. We're kind of seeing like what's next, what goes beyond, how do we heal, and what comes next and developing our sexual ethics now on the other side of things. But then the other piece was I tend to see spaces in the progressive world that have limitations on some of those conversations. So you start to open up conversations about sex workers, conversations about ethical porn and non-monogamy. And people are like, whoa, I can come out of purity culture, but that's too much. And so I want to have a space where we can have all of the conversations. And if I'm not saying everyone, come in here and you have to be non-monogamous, but I think there's so much that we can learn from, and I know like Cortland, my co-host, is non-monogamous. Like there's so much we can learn from about relationships and conversations about communication and consent and things like that from everyone in this space. And I just tried to pull in as many intersectional voices as possible to have those conversations. And so we have a bunch of people coming out to Portland in person. It's over President's Day weekend, February 16th and 17th. And also we have a live stream so that if folks are not able to come in person, we want it to be accessible. And we have people that are going to be facilitating the conversation on the live stream. So you're not just watching from a screen. You're part of the conversation too.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I'm very impressed at how it's coming together. And yeah, it's going to be a great event for sure.
I said the dates wrong. It's February 17th and 18th. It's Saturday and Sunday of that weekend.
But if you're in town on the 16th, we can hang out maybe.
We'll be hanging out then too. So, it's Friday night.
Yeah. Yep. So mark off that whole weekend, come to Portland. And if not, check us out on the live stream. So that's contentwarningevent.com. And I'll also include that link in the doobly-doo.
I also kind of love that it's near Valentine's Day because you can just kind of be like, fuck Valentine's Day. We're going to all, hang out together and do our own thing.
Or get your significant other tickets to Content Warning for Valentine's Day.
There you go.
It can be both. You can celebrate Valentine's Day or screw Valentine's Day. Either one is valid.
Or screw each other on Valentine's Day.
And then come to Content Warning. Yeah.
So many wins. It's a win-win-win, as we like to say.
There's so many ways to win at this game. So, so we're going to pivot a bit. We're going to talk about the Bible, as we do on this show.
Which needs a content warning.
It does need a content warning. We've gotten away from the drinking game, so to speak. Although if you want a drinking game, take a shot for every time we say ejaculation in the first half of the show.
Just start the episode over. It's fine.
Trust me, you'll be passed out by this moment. But here's a conundrum I have for us today to think about before we start talking about Michael or Michael or however you want to say it. And John and David's love life in general. So and Michael was kind of spurned by David, and Jonathan had David's full attention. So,
weirdest throuple of all time. Like it's weirdest throuple of all time with a sibling. Like that's strange.
So here's my conundrum, and maybe it's not a conundrum, but if you had to be in a throuple with David, would you rather be the person he spurns? Or would you rather be the person he's low-key obsessed with, but maybe can't actually be with?
Can we just forget David and just stick with Michael and Abigail?
Maybe. Yeah, Michael and Abigail.
This is something that I think about a lot. because I'm weird and I live next to Utah. Mm-hmm. But no, the whole like sister, like plural marriage, sister wives in Mormonism. I'm like, well, you know, like Brigham Young had like 40 something wives, I think 40 mm-hmm. or 50 wives. Like you could all just get like, he's too busy to fuck any of you. Like just mm-hmm. do whatever you want. He's not there. That's sort of how I feel about
you. David could easily hide too. Out and never have to deal with him.
Truly, you could just like disappear yeah. yourself. He yeah. wouldn't remember you were there. You can't remember 44 spouses. Like that's not real.
I mean, that's kind of what happens to Michael. She gets just kind of gets off the mm-hmm. picture for a while and marries somebody else. Like that's this. I don't know like how chronological you want to go with the story, but I just have to say like. It was this story that was my last straw with the Bible.
Oh, really?
I was like, I remember because I was like still, I was deconstructing, but I was like, I had this routine where I'd get up and I've even like, I showed Justin before we were recording that I have this fancy inductive Bible that I would like use colored pencils and they have the chapters, like there's no chapter titles. And so they have you study on your own and figure out like what the heading should be for each chapter. So I had this whole routine. And I remember my therapist was like, you don't have to do this. Because I would go to therapy, like, all fucked up. And she'd be like, it's okay. Like, I give you permission.
Oh, man, that's funny.
But yeah, Michael was my last
straw. So you would rather, well, I'll just answer for myself. I think I'd rather be ignored by David. Because if I've learned anything about ancient Near Eastern kings, the more they have their attention on you, the more likely it is they're going to kill you. So...
Yeah,
I would rather be the one that's ignored. It's hard. It's a hard road, you know. It's a hard road to have your love not reciprocated. But I think it's probably nets you a better life in the long run. That's just me.
Yeah.
Other people might be into having David be King David be obsessed with them, but not I.
I could see it. I'm not. I don't think that wouldn't be how I rolled particularly. I don't think. You know, he seems like. You know, well, it was all, let's just say, like, back then, all mental illness was untreated. So it was a hard time for everybody. Like, me Fair. And David, we would have had a bad time. Like, there would have been some spears thrown. That's all I'm saying. So
yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I will hang with the wives. I will be in the harem. That sounds like a great time to me personally.
Yeah. Agree. I'm there too.
All right. So we're all in the harem together.
Perfect. All love right. it. Love this for us.
Yeah. So, okay. So we're going to talk about the story of Michael, or I guess we'll say Michael. Yeah. There's like six ways to say it. No one, here's the thing, folks. No one actually knows. It's all made up. So you just pick one, say it confidently, and people will follow. So who is this person, Michael? And yeah, let's talk about her. Yeah, Megan, would you? I'm sorry. See,
is it my turn?
Here's the thing. When you're used to when 80% of the time you only have one co-host, it's easy to kind of punt back and forth. But then when you do what I do, which is vague punting, where it's just like, let's maybe talk about this sometime, probably, maybe. What do you, maybe, possibly? Silence. It's easy to pick up. But when you do a vague punt and there's two of you,
like, well,
it's harder. So Megan, tell us about Michael. How did this story start for you?
Originally, Michael and David were in love. Mm. And so it's just funny because David was going to marry Michael's sister, both daughters of Saul. And then, I don't know, there's no explanation. It just says she just went to somebody else. And so then he was like, well, maybe I'll marry Michael. And Saul's like, well, I've become a father-in-law twice today now. And I'm like, did this happen in a day? Like, I don't know. There are so many questions that I have. But this is the story of people. You probably know so many parts of this story, but maybe that they aren't all in the same story. But this is when then Saul sits down with David and says, if you bring me 100 foreskins as a dowry, then you can marry my daughter. And then he brings 200 foreskins because David goes big, I guess.
He had him just laying around.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So that's the beginning. And the funny thing is, and there's so much of this story, and I won't even tell it all right now, but there's like chapters and chapters in 1 Samuel at the like chapter 20 to like into 2 Samuel. But it's hilarious because it weaves in and out, like it'll sporadically mention Michal or other wives of David. But then that is the bulk of where David and Jonathan are together. And I just have a lot of questions because it'll be like, yeah, he married Michal. And then he goes out on a field and has a little lad with him. And there's this symbol of an arrow with Jonathan and they make a covenant together. And Jonathan gives David his robe. And I'm like, there's a lot of like intimate moments happening in fields and with robes and in disrobing that I'm just like, where's Michal? And what, like, is there, maybe there is a throuple happening here. I don't know.
We talked about the 200 foreskins. I don't remember what episode it was. It was one of our first episodes, I'm pretty sure.
Well, we talked about just foreskins in general, how the Bible is just obsessed with foreskins.
Yeah, like, and removing them.
And
not consensually.
And it's not even a great trophy. Like it, I mean, I guess for ease of transport, maybe, I don't know. Like it's better than hands.
Oh yeah, it's easier than heads.
Heads, yeah. Or hands or feet. Like you know, you have a Philistine, I suppose. Like, but it's,
there we go.
It just
circumcising all his brothers by force.
Like, and then like, this is where my mind goes. Like, was there like this kind of like black market and fake foreskins? Like they had like calamari or something that like, you know, here you can, you know, pretend that you killed a bunch of Philistines. Like
it was a delicacy.
Yeah. I don't know.
But also it's not like they had coolers of ice to transport any of these things in. So I just like, yeah, like a satchel. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, and then like, you know, there was someone that was good at transporting foreskins. Like that was their job.
That's your guy. Yeah,
he's my foreskin guy. Like,
you just put them all on a necklace. And you just wear it around.
Yeah.
It's like one of those candy necklaces that you had when you were a kid. Oh, God. Oh, my God. That's what I'm imagining, except it smelled really bad.
Jewelry.
Yeah. It smelled so bad.
So,
not that, could you smell anything back then? Everything smelled bad back then. I don't know if you could tell.
And then what does Michal think about this? Like, is she like, because the dowry was typically money, and that was part of David's thing. Like, he's like, I don't really have a ton of money right now. Like, kind of hard up for cash. And then, you know,
you're
Saul's
not paying
like,
me. So,
this is unpaid labor killing giants for you. So, and then.
Well, okay, so Michal is not, she's kind of in the background, not the foreground, but she's kind of in the background for a while. She helps, David and Saul are like at battle with each other. She helps David kind of escape from Saul at one point and kind of covers for him. But then she and David goes off and marries a couple other people, has new wives, goes off and is fighting battles and has his kind of homestead with him. He's like traveling with his wives. But then we fast forward and Michal is given, and I think that's the part that kept irking me about Michal, because it's like, she's property, right? That's women in the Bible. She's property. Yeah. Saul gives Michal to someone else. And so she has another husband. And then David just decides one day, you know, he has these two wives. He decides like, I'm going to come back for her. I want to claim her again. And so in 2 Samuel, he comes back and there's this verse that says they sent and took her from her husband, talking about Michal. And then the husband goes with her. He's following like in my mind, I don't know, I could be picturing this wrong, but like the caravan of everyone leaving, like David's claimed Michal. And then this husband of Michal is following and weeping. And gets, you know, to another city. And finally someone turns around and says, go return. And so he leaves. And then Michal just is now with David. And I'm like, I have so many questions.
Yeah.
Like, what this is. And then Michal is, if people haven't put it all together, Michal is the one that when King David's leaping and dancing before the Lord, she looks out the window and sees and despises him in her heart. And so it's just, I'm like, well, yeah. Hell yeah, she despises him. I despise him, right?
Yeah. Because it seems like David is just using like legal shenanigans to like get his property back. But it seems like she at least publicly, like it seemed like she was with someone that actually wanted to be with her, you know, so it's like.
But she was the daughter of Saul. So she's, I mean, it's like, oh, there's this political gain to be.
Yeah. You're kind of like a pawn on the chessboard. Mm-hmm. If you're like the king. If you're the king's daughter, you're just like, you're just a piece to get moved around on the board, essentially. Which is sounds pretty miserable to me, honestly. Not going to lie. Like everything about David sounds pretty miserable now that I think about it.
Yeah, I think like as a kid, like you like imagine like, oh, it'd be cool to be a king or a queen, like, you know, in ancient times or whatever. It's like, actually, I think the peasants probably had it pretty fine. Like, I mean, they were worked really hard, but they could like marry for love and like have breaks and, you know,
I mean,
like,
if you knew not to shit in your drinking water and there was no famine, like, yeah, I think you'd be better off. You'd probably and you'd be healthier. Like the more we learn about like the ancient Near East, like the people who were not in cities were healthier. So like, yeah, I think that staying away from like the cities, staying away from the kings, like don't want any of that shit back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, poor Michael.
Can we also ask, can we just pause and ask about David and Jonathan? Have you done an episode about David and Jonathan? Was David bi?
It's time to revisit it. And I want to revisit it through the lens of his like other wives. Like, cause it is like, I don't know that I've had someone like Megan, when you brought it up like that, I don't know that I've had someone frame it quite like this, that like the David and Jonathan story really takes place as David's collecting wives, like, and they're all in the background, and in the foreground is this quote friendship. So yeah, let's talk about it.
I just think there's some really strong language about their friendship, about like Jonathan made David vow again because of his love for him, because he loved him as he loved his own life. Like, I remember I was having a conversation with someone when I was evangelical and studying this shit. And I was like, wait a second. Were they in a relationship? And they were like, I have never heard that before. And I was like, well, it reads that way.
He doesn't say that about any women at any point in his life.
Yeah.
Like, he only says it about Jonathan, which I think is very interesting. I don't know. Yeah.
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 And Saul's anger about their relationship, too. Mm-hmm. I just feel like Saul's kind of like, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman.
Yeah.
You know, I think that expression maybe morphed after that to something else.
And like, I mean, yeah, it's 2 Samuel. Like, to me, you were greatly beloved. Your love for me was more wonderful than the love of a woman. Like.
So platonic. That's how I read
like,
that.
I'm sorry. Like, if I said that about a dude, I'd be fucking him. Like, you know?
Right?
Like,
it's not.
Like, this
yeah,
is.
Yeah, it's strange. And I think the other thing, because we mentioned this one of the times that we've talked this, because David
it's
and
come
up, has come up
several
times. You know, so we've definitely mentioned this before, but there's like, yeah, David doesn't, there isn't any. Like, I never heard a sermon preached to men about how you need to go and find your Jonathan.
Yeah.
And they're obsessed with King David. They're obsessed with telling men, be like King David. Never a word about you need to go and find your Jonathan.
Yeah.
Which to me, like, that means that, like, even, because I was told explicitly, like, no, they were not gay. They were very close friends. So when I asked about it, it was like, no, that's disgusting. Why would you say that? It's clearly not that.
It's kind of like when you say, is this a cult? And you're like, no, it's not a cult. Like, we have to be very explicit and say it's not a cult. It's like,
we only tithe 10% of our income.
If you're saying like, no, they're not gay, I feel like there is, then if you have to constantly say that, then
maybe
they are.
Something is going on. Right. Because I think that it's that, like, to me, there isn't really anything about David's life that is worth emulating. You know, like the David and the David killing Goliath story may or may not have even happened. Like, David was given credit after the fact. And like, he clearly is really struggling with his mental health, like all over the Bible. And so like, kind of, this seems like sort of his connection with Jonathan seems like sort of the only joyful part of his life, at least as it reads in the Bible. And I've read it several times at this point. But yeah, there's never like somehow pastors turn David into somebody to emulate. And in those sermons, like Michael was the bad guy, right? Like she was the one that did wrong. And David kind of couldn't do wrong except for that one time that he did the rape, but like he repented. So like
another time he treated a woman like property. Like
okay, but I was just gonna bring that up because I didn't want to mess it up to you, and I don't want you to lose your train of thought. But when David met Abigail, she was married, and then her husband died, and then he's like, oh, like, and I just feel like, what's the pattern here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, like, I mean, there is allegedly a Roman saying that goes something like this, that says women are for babies and men are for love. Like, that's a Roman saying. I'm wondering if there's something similar going on for David. Like, women are status symbols, but, like, men are my companions. Like, almost like I collect these things because I'm supposed to have them. But, like, if I want, like, actual intimacy, like, sexually, romantically, whatever, like, it's going to be with the king's son. Like, which is fucking sad, but also like you could play that kind of sweet, I guess. I don't know. Like, but it's just it's tragic in a way that it feels like the only person he could be intimate with was someone he saw as an equal.
Well, and I'd also like to point out that Michael was also the king's son. So like they're at best half siblings, yeah. Michael and Jonathan. Yeah. So it's just kind of like a whole family friendly fun, I guess.
Yeah. Family fun times. So like
I also feel like
you're good.
Well, I cut Tori off, and I just want to make sure if I didn't know where anyway.
Oh no, ahead. Yeah, it's all good. It's something that I think about, that I kind of reflect on a lot, is the fact that like David and Jonathan's relationship is never considered something to emulate in church, despite the fact that David is like one of the heroes of the Bible. Like he is literally up there with Saint Paul, in evangelical churches. But like this relationship is never something to emulate.
I think it's because they don't know what to do with it, because like putting aside the fact that David and Jonathan were likely sexually intimate with each other and romantically intimate with each other, like setting aside that for a second, in our culture, for two men to be that close, they would be accused of being gay. Like, you know, like,
yeah.
So even if there was nothing going on with David and Jonathan, like the way misogyny, the way that toxic masculinity has taken shape in our culture and specifically in evangelicalism, men wouldn't have access to that kind of friendship even if they wanted it. Mm-hmm. So without accusations of being soft, being gay, whatever. Like I've been in a lot of evangelical circles, and what passes for closeness among men is like sitting down on the same couch watching the Super Bowl together. Like you know, like that's who I'm close with, you know.
What's weird though is that whole piece where Michael's husband's following and weeping, because I feel like that was too soft. It's like, oh, you know, you got too close to a woman. That's not what women are for. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that, it's like they had a real maybe marriage, love, whatever. He's like follows this caravan and is weeping, and they're like, just go home, dude. You know, and I just am like, what, like it's so fucked up that then Michael couldn't have that and then is just snatched away as property to join David's already hundreds of thousands of like however many caravan, however many people he has in his little homestead.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No, it is. Justin, you saying it was kind of tragic, like I never really thought about it that way, but it very much is. Like I feel like the entire story of David and like everyone that he interacts with essentially is kind of tragic.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in like ways that would be good or sweet, rarely, and largely in ways that are abusive and manipulative and just like power
hungry. I say that in the same way that like Hitler and Eva Braun's like relationship probably had some sweetness to it, like for a few moments. You know what I mean? Like it's like you could play that as sweet. There's probably a movie in there somewhere where you could play them as sympathetic and sweet, but not for long.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
So it's when I say that, it's like, yeah, there's probably was some like genuine like breaks from the brutality of living in that time, but still, like, I don't think they saw women as people. And that's a problem for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that part of it is pretty upsetting.
I've been sitting here trying to figure out how many foreskins I would be worth if that was the price that you had to pay for my...
I'm going to say like between zero and none for me. Like, I'm not worth any foreskins. No, thanks. Thank you. Go with God, because I'm not going with you.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, can we go here for a second? Like, could you imagine, like, someone, like a guy comes up to you, gives you a necklace of like 65 foreskins or something, and he gets rejected. He's like, but I worked hard for these. Like, I put a lot of effort here.
Enough.
Like, you can't just reject guys. Like, we have feelings too.
Oh my God.
You know?
Oh,
what am I going to tell the 65 guys that I took the foreskins from? That you rejected me? Come on.
Give them back. They're not your property.
Yeah.
Can we have, I feel like we could have Naked Pastor do a portrayal of this. Like, the guys that lost their foreskins to pay for Michael, like, just sitting in the background here.
Sorry, you're like, yeah, match graphic. The foreskin with the dick. Like, that's they didn't have games back then, so this is what you did for fun.
Pin the foreskin.
Yes, perfect.
Pin the foreskin on the Philistine. Jesus.
Oh wow.
So.
This is cathartic. I see why y'all do this every week, because I do feel I should go back to that therapist and be like, I had my moment with Michael.
Yeah. And she, like, allegedly, like, because she, like, frowned on David, she's cursed with barrenness, you know, by God, which, plug for our episode on the David dancing with Transvangelical, because David may not have just been dancing. I'll just say that. You can go listen to the episode.
He was hard for the Lord.
He was hard for Christ, yes.
I mean, haven't you heard that song? Yes, yes. Lord, yes. Yes, yes. Lord. Yes, yes, Lord. Isn't that song?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the song. So yeah, it's like she has kind of a tragic end too. Like she has a not great life and a tragic end. And like in the middle, a marriage that at least the guy cried for, like, you know, which, I mean, that's all we have to go on, but
yeah, no thanks.
Yeah. I have questions, unanswered questions that will never get answered.
So I feel like we haven't done this in a while, and I know it feels like it gets sprung on us every time. I feel like we should do a casting for this. So let's cast David for this particular story.
Mm-hmm.
Let's cast Jonathan and let's cast Michael. Through the magic of editing, I'll give you time to think.
Through the magic of editing.
You have to have had cast David.
We have.
We have, definitely.
For sure. I'm going to wade into this first. Okay. I'm just going to go ahead and cast. Okay, so this is going to actually be weird because David is a bit douchey in this particular story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna cast
just in this story.
this particular story, we're kind of dialing up the douchiness of David, and I feel like Timothée Chalamet would be able to pull that off, I think, quite well.
Interesting choice.
Yeah, so I'm gonna cast him as King David for this particular story.
Probably the age fits too, because he was probably like 13 when all this was happening.
Yeah, for true. Yeah.
Like, hey, kid, go get some foreskins for me. Like, I want to marry you off to my 11-year-old daughter. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. So, what do y'all think for David?
This is hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm kind of stuck on the Oscar Isaac, but I think that timeline-wise, it doesn't make as much sense. So,
all right. What if we do, I'm just going to throw somebody out there that's somewhat for Michael. What do we think about Millie Bobby Brown?
I could see it. Sure. I can see that.
Okay. So we have,
okay.
I'm looking her up.
All right. We might not know enough. The problem is we're old now. And so we're trying to we're thinking of like Oscar Isaac, Pedro Pascal, actors our age.
Yeah.
And now it's I want to Google young, attractive actresses? Like, is that something?
That wouldn't even put you on like a list, to be honest.
No, probably not.
I think the only one we have there is Jenna Ortega.
I'll say Jenna Ortega actually would be better as Michael. That's better for sure.
She could pull that off. I feel like she's got a little bit of Wednesday in her to give that, like, that. I just feel like I can picture a look that she's giving David watching him dance. Like, and hopefully that look also comes with a curse that she's sending to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was actually who I thought of first. But I was like, I don't want to be basic, so maybe I'll just, like, try to think of someone else.
All right.
I'll just be the basic one.
Here's actually what I'm going to say for Jonathan, because Jonathan, I think, is a little older. I'm going to say Daniel Radcliffe for Jonathan.
Ooh.
Okay.
I also feel like you're bringing in the British actor.
I mean, because honestly, I get that we're casting white people as Middle Eastern. This is a Bible film, so that they were all white. That's just the way that the evangelicals see it.
They don't see race if it's white people.
They don't see white. Yeah, exactly. If it's all white people, it's fine.
They don't see
Jenna Ortega is not. But
can we do one more? Can we cast Saul? I feel like, can we just cast Saul? I don't have a person in mind. I just want to.
I'm just going to go with Oscar Isaac. Like, and we'll do full Dune casting. Oscar Isaac.
Oh my gosh.
And
there you go.
Well, Zendaya. Like. Just the cast of Dune, but
just
in, like, this movie.
Yeah, just pick it up and put it over here. Uh-huh.
There you go. All right. I'm good with that. Perfect.
We did it.
Yay.
His dad, the son. There you go.
All right. So thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope you had a good time. Please remember to check out contentwarning.com or to contentwarningevent.com.
Content Warning Event.
For Content Warning.
I don't know what's at contentwarning.com, so just
check them both out. Tell us about it. Remember to ejaculate responsibly. Have a good week.